tomorrow night's concert, beginning at the usual time, 7:30.
At the start of this year, I went to see Dora, who cuts my hair. I said, "Now, I want your best shot, Dora, because I've got a big birthday coming up." "Well, you know what they say, Julian, 60 is the new 40. But, as I explained, 70 is the new 68.
Light Radio 3, the writer Julian Barnes is celebrating 70 years.
"I remember you," he wrote, "as a noisy and irritating presence in the sixth form corridor." I couldn't deny this fellow pupil's reminiscence. And so, belatedly, I've changed my mind about what I must have been like 50 and more years ago.
Changing My Mind on The Essay. Weeknights at 10:45, starting tomorrow.
You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's 9 o'clock. And now for our drama on 3, Colin Morgan reads Autumn Journal, the poetic testament of life in 1938, written by Louis MacNeice against the backdrop of the Munich crisis and the Spanish Civil War. It's introduced by the poet Colette Bryce.
We regard the agreement signed last night as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
It's autumn in London, 1938. On Primrose Hill, the poet Louis MacNeice hears the blows of an axe outside as trees are cut down to make way for anti-aircraft guns. The newsboys are shouting of a coming war, while the trauma of the previous war continues to reverberate. At 31, newly divorced, MacNeice begins a journal in verse in which to consider the rapidly moving political events of the day. It will result in the long poem Autumn Journal, published on the outbreak of World War II and widely regarded as his masterpiece. One of the pleasures of MacNeice's poetry is his appetite for the copious detail of everyday life, what he called in a famous line, the drunkenness of things being various. In a letter to T.S. Eliot, he named the parts of himself that arise in Autumn Journal: the anarchist, the defeatist, the sensual man, the philosopher, the would-be good citizen. Through all of these, his words retain the self-reflective mood of the diarist, zooming in on personal crises, the end of his marriage, or a broken love affair, as much as the noisy public sphere. Born in Belfast and privately educated in England, MacNeice strips back the protections and pretensions of his own privileged class, turning his critical gaze as searchingly towards himself as to 1930s society. Beyond the tent of light on the poet's desk, the forces of fascism are massing, and Chamberlain's appeasement of Hitler, the Munich crisis, has divided opinion back home. Nazi propaganda speaks of making Germany great again, while in Barcelona the Spanish Civil War approaches its bitter denouement. As the critic Edna Longley has noted, the poem dramatises our full human alarm when historical forces move fast. Autumn Journal speaks as powerfully today as it did when published in 1939. In our own turbulent times, Louis MacNeice may prove an essential companion. Colin Morgan reads Autumn Journal by Louis MacNeice.
Here comes Hassett. He makes a short run up, he bows, and Hardstaff goes back on his back foot, plays the ball down to mid-on where Fleetwood Smith fields it. Still in the most perfect of afternoons, 898/7, and Hassett bows.
Close and slow. Summer is ending in Hampshire, ebbing away down ramps of shaven lawn where close-clipped yew insulates the lives of retired generals and admirals, and the spyglasses hung in the hall and the prayer books ready in the pew, and August going out to the tin trumpets of nasturtiums and the sunflower's Salvation Army blare of brass, and the spinster sitting in a deck chair picking up stitches, not raising her eyes to the noise of the planes that pass northward from Leon Solent. Macrocarpa and cypress and roses in a rustic trellis and mulberry trees, and bacon and eggs in a silver dish for breakfast, and all the inherited assets of bodily ease and all the inherited worries, rheumatism and taxes, and whether Stella will marry, and what to do with Dick, and the branch of the family that lost their money in Hatchery, and the passing of the Morning Post, and of life's climacteric, and the growth of vulgarity, cars that pass the gate lodge, and crowds undressing on the beach, and hiking Cockney lovers with thoughts directed neither to God nor nation, but each to each. But the home is still a sanctum under the pelmets, all quiet on the family front. Farmyard noises across the fields at evening, while the trucks of the Southern Railway dawdle, shunt into poppy sidings for the night, night which knows no passion, no assault of hands or tongue, for all is old as flint or chalk or pine needles, and the rebels and the young have taken the train to town or the two-seater, unravelling rails or road, losing the thread deliberately behind them. Autumnal palinode. And I am in the train too now, and summer is going south as I go north, bound for the dead leaves falling, the burning bonfire, the dying that brings forth the harder life, revealing the tree's girders, the frost that kills the germs of laissez-faire. Westmeon, Tisted, Farnham, Woking, Weybridge, then London's packed and stale and pregnant air. My dog, a symbol of the abandoned order, lies on the carriage floor, her eyes inept and glamorous as a film star's. Who wants to live, i.e., who wants more presents? Jewellery, furs, gadgets, solicitations, as if to live were not following the curve of a planet or controlled water, but a leap in the dark, a tangent, a stray shot. It is this we learn after so many failures. The building of castles in sand, of queens in snow, that we cannot make any corner in life or in life's beauty, that no river is a river which does not flow. Surbiton, and a woman gets in, painted with dyed hair but a ladder in her stockings, and eyes patient beneath the calculated lashes, inured forever to surprise. And the train's rhythm becomes the ad nauseam repetition of every tired obad and maudlin madrigal, the faded airs of sexual attraction wandering like dead leaves along a warehouse wall. I loved my love with a platform ticket, a jazz song, a handbag, a pair of stockings of Parisson. I loved her long. I loved her between the lines and against the clock. Not until death, but till life did us part, I loved her with paper money and with whiskey on the breath. I loved her with peacock's eyes and the wares of Carthage, with glass and gloves and gold and a powder puff, with blasphemy, camaraderie and bravado and lots of other stuff. I loved my love with the wings of angels dipped in henna, unearthly red, with my office hours, with flowers and sirens, with my budget, my latchkey and my daily bread. And so to London and down the ever-moving stairs, where a warm wind blows the bodies of men together and blows apart their complexes and cares.
I would define the general policy of the government in the realm of foreign affairs as a positive policy of peace.
Spider, spider, twisting tight, but the watch is wary beneath the pillow. I am afraid in the web of night, when the window is fingered by the shadows of branches, when the lions roar beneath the hill, and the meter clicks, and the cistern bubbles, and the gods are absent, and the men are still. Nolly May Tangere. My soul is forfeit. Some now are happy in the hive of home, thigh over thigh, and a light in the night nursery. And some are hungry under the starry dome, and some sit turning handles. Glory to God in the lowest, peace beneath the earth. Dumb and deaf the nadir, I wonder now whether anything is worth the eyelid opening and the mind recalling. And I think of Persephone gone down to dark, no more a virgin, gone the garish meadow. But why must she come back? Why must the snowdrop mark that life goes on forever? There are nights when I am lonely and long for love, but tonight is quintessential dark, forbidding anyone beside or below me. Only above pile high the tumulus, goodbye to starlight. Goodbye the platonic sieve of the carnal man, but goodbye also Plato's philosophizing. I have a better plan, to hit the target straight without circumlocution. If you can equate being in its purest form with denial of all appearance, then let me disappear. The scent grows warm for pure not being, nirvana. Only the spider spinning out his reams of colourless thread says only there are always interlopers, dreams, who let no dead dog lie nor death be final, suggesting while he spins that tomorrow will outweigh tonight, that becoming is a match for being, that tomorrow is also a day, that I must leave my bed and face the music. As all the others do, who, with a grin, shake off sleep like a dog and hurry to desk or engine, and the fear of life goes out as they clock in and history is reasserted. Spider, spider, your irony is true. Who am I, or I, to demand oblivion? I must go out tomorrow as the others do and build the falling castle, which has never fallen, thanks not to any formula, red tape or institution, not to any creeds or banks, but to the human animal's endless courage. Spider, spider, spin your register and let me sleep a little. Not now in order to end, but to begin the task begun so often.
I'm no millionaire, but I'm not the type to care, 'cause I've got a pocket full of dreams.
August is nearly over. The people back from holiday are tanned with blistered thumbs and a wallet of snaps and a little joie de vivre, which is contraband, whose stamina is enough to face the annual wait for the annual spree, whose memories are stamped with specks of sunshine like faded fleur-de-lis. Now, the till and the typewriter call the fingers. The workman gathers his tools for the eight-hour day, but after that, the solace of films or football pools, or of the gossip or cuddle, the moments of self-glory or self-indulgence, blinkers on the eyes of doubt. The blue smoke rising and the brown lace sinking in the empty glass of stout. Most are acceptors, born and bred to harness, and take things as they come. But some, refusing harness, and more who are refused it, would pray that another and a better kingdom come, which now is sketched in the air, or travestied in slogans written in chalk or tar, on stucco or plasterboard, but in time may find its body in men's bodies, its law and order in their hearts' accord, where skill will no longer languish, nor energy be trammelled to competition and graft, exploited in subservience but not allegiance to an utterly lost and daft system that gives a few at fancy prices their fancy lives, while 99 in the 100 who never attend the banquet must wash the grease of ages off the knives. And now the tempter whispers, but you also have the slave owner's mind, would like to sleep on a mattress of easy profits, to snap your fingers or a whip and find servants or houris ready to wince and flatter and build with their degradation your self-esteem. What you want is not a world of the free in function, but a niche at the top, the skimmings of the cream. And I answer that is largely so, for habit makes me think victory for one implies another's defeat. That freedom means the power to order, and that in order to preserve the values dear to the elite must remain a few. It is so hard to imagine a world where the many would have their chance without a fall in the standard of intellectual living and nothing left that the highbrow cared about. Which fears must be suppressed? There is no reason for thinking that if you give a chance to people to think or live, the arts of thought or life will suffer and become rougher and not return more than you could ever give. And now I relapse to sleep, to dreams perhaps, and reaction where I shall play the gangster or the sheik, kill for the love of killing, make the world my sofa, unzip the women and insult the meek. Which fantasies, no doubt, are due to my private history. Matter for the analyst. But the final cure is not in his past dissecting fingers, but in a future of action, the will and fist of those who abjure the luxury of self-pity and prefer to risk a movement without being sure if movement would be better or worse in 100 years or 1,000 when their heart is pure. None of our hearts are pure. We always have mixed motives, are self-deceivers, but worst of all deceits is to murmur, Lord, I am not worthy, and lying easy, turn your face to the wall. May I cure that habit, look up and outwards, and may my feet follow my wider glance, first no doubt to stumble, then to walk with the others, and in the end, with time and luck, to dance.
Lucky, lucky me, I can live in luxury, 'cause I've got a pocket full of dreams.
September has come and I wake and I think with joy how whatever, now or in future, the system, nothing whenever can take the people away. There will always be people, for friends or for lovers, though perhaps the conditions of love will be changed and its vices diminished, and affection not lapse to narrow possessiveness, jealousy founded on vanity. September has come. It is hers whose vitality leaps in the autumn, whose nature prefers trees without leaves and a fire in the fireplace. So I give her this month and the next, though the whole of my year should be hers, who has rendered already so many of its days intolerable or perplexed, but so many more so happy, who has left a scent on my life and left my walls dancing over and over with her shadow, whose hair is twined in all my waterfalls and all of London littered with remembered kisses. So I am glad that life contains her with her moods and moments, more shifting and more transient than I had yet thought of as being integral to beauty, whose mind is like the wind on a sea of wheat, whose eyes are candor and assurance in her feet like a homing pigeon never by doubt diverted, to whom I send my thanks that the air has become shot silk, the streets are music, and that the ranks of men are ranks of men, no more of ciphers. So that if now, alone, I must pursue this life, it will not be only a drag from numbered stone to numbered stone, but a ladder of angels, river-turning tidal. Offhand, at times hysterical, abrupt, you are one I always shall remember, whom cant can never corrupt, nor argument disinherit. Frivolous, always in a hurry, forgetting the address, frowning too often, taking enormous notice of hats and backchat, how could I assess the thing that makes you different? You, whom I remember glad or tired, smiling in drink or scintillating anger, inopportunely desired on boats, on trains, on roads when walking, sometimes untidy, often elegant, so easily hurt, so readily responsive, to whom a trifle could be an irritant or could be balm and manna, whose words would tumble over each other and pelt from pure excitement, whose fingers curl and melt when you were friendly. I shall remember you in bed with bright eyes, or in a cafe stirring coffee abstractedly, and on your plate the white smoking stub your lips had touched with crimson. And I shall remember how your words could hurt, because they were so honest, and even your lies were able to assert integrity of purpose. And it is on the strength of knowing you I reckon generous feeling more important than the mere deliberating what to do when neither the pros nor cons affect the pulses. And though I have suffered from your special strength, who never flatter for points nor fake responses, I should be proud if I could evolve at length an equal thrust and pattern.
Menschenrechte errungen. Sie wurden dem deutschen Volk und Reich verweigert. Trotzdem dieses damalige Deutschland nicht von Nazis geführt.
Today was a beautiful day. The sky was a brilliant blue for the first time for weeks and weeks. But posters flapping on the railings tell the fluttered world that Hitler speaks. That Hitler speaks and we cannot take it in, and we go to our daily jobs, to the dull refrain of the caption, war buzzing around us as from hidden insects, and we think, this must be wrong. It has happened before, just like this before. We must be dreaming. It was long ago these flies buzzed like this, so why are they still bombarding the ears, if not the eyes? And we laugh it off and go round town in the evening, and this, we say, is on me. Something out of the usual. A PIMS number one, a Pekin. But did you see the latest? You mean whether Cobb has bust the record? Or do you mean the Australians have lost their last by 10 wickets? Or do you mean that the autumn fashions? No, we don't mean anything like that again. No. What we mean is Hodja, Henlein, Hitler, the Maginot Line. The heavy panic that cramps the lungs and presses the collar down the spine. And when we go out into Piccadilly Circus, they are selling and buying the late special editions snatched and read abruptly beneath the electric lights, beneath the electric signs, as crude as fate. And the individual, powerless, has to exert the powers of will and choice and choose between enormous evils, either of which depends on somebody else's voice. The cylinders are racing in the presses, the mines are lead, the ribbon plumbs the fallen fathoms of Wall Street, and you and I are afraid. Today they were building in Oxford Street. The mortar, pleasant to smell, but now it seems futility, imbecility, to be building shops when nobody can tell what will happen next. What will happen, we ask, and waste the question on the air. Nelson is stone, and Johnny Walker moves his legs like a cretin over Trafalgar Square. And in the corner house, the carpet sweepers advance between the tables after crumbs inexorably, like a tank battalion in answer to the drums. In Tottenham Court Road, the tarts and negroes loiter beneath the lights, and the breeze gets colder as on so many other September nights. A smell of French bread in Charlotte Street, a rustle of leaves in Regent's Park, and suddenly from the zoo I hear a sea lion confidently bark. And so to my flat, with the trees outside the window, and the dahlia shapes of the lights on Primrose Hill, whose summit once was used for a gun emplacement, and very likely will be used that way again. The bloody frontier converges on our beds like jungle beaters closing in on their destined trophy of pelts and heads, and at this hour of the day it is no good saying, take away this cup. Having helped to fill it ourselves, it is only logic that now we should drink it up. Nor can we hide our heads in the sands. The sands have filtered away. Nothing remains but rock at this hour, this zero hour of the day. Well, that is how it seems to me as I listen to a hooter call at six, and then a wood pigeon calls and stops, but the wind continues playing its dirge in the trees, playing its tricks. And now the dairy cart comes clopping slowly, milk at the doors, and factory workers are on their way to factories and charwomen to chores. And I notice feathers sprouting from the rotted silk of my black double eiderdown, which was a wedding present 8 years back. And the linen which I lie on came from Ireland in the easy days, when all I thought of was affection and comfort, petting and praise. And now the wood pigeon starts again, denying the values of the town, and a car, having crossed the hill, accelerates, changes up, having just changed down. And a train begins to chug, and I wonder what the morning paper will say, and decide to go quickly to sleep. For the morning already is with us. The day is today.
Back from Scotland come the King and Queen at the end of their holiday, so dramatically interrupted this year by the Great Crisis. Their Majesties, returning to play their part in what we hope will be the calmer days ahead, resume residence at Buckingham Palace.
And I remember Spain at Easter, ripe as an egg for revolt and ruin. Though for a tripper, the rain was worse than the surly or the worried or the haunted faces, with writings on the walls. Hammer and sickle, boycott, biba, muerta. With café au lait brimming the waterfalls, with sherry, shellfish, omelettes. With fretted stone, the moor had chiselled for effects of sun and shadow. With shadows of the poor, the begging cripples, and the children begging. The churches full of saints tortured on racks of marble. The old complaints covered with gilt and dimly lit with candles. With powerful or banal monuments of riches or repression, and the Escorial cold forever within like the heart of Philip. With ranks of dominoes deployed on the cafe tables the whole of Sunday. With cabarets that call the tourist. Shows of thighs and eyes and nipples, with slovenly soldiers, nuns, and peeling posters from the last elections promising bread or guns, or an amnesty or another order, or else the old glory veneered and varnished as if veneer could hold the rotten guts and crumbled bones together. And a vulture hung in the air below the cliffs of Rhondda, and below him his hooked-winged shadow wavered like despair across the checkered vineyards. And the bootblacks in Madrid kept us half an hour with polish and pincers, and all we did in that city was drink and think and loiter. And in the Prado half-wit princes looked from the canvas they had paid for. Goya had the laugh. But can what is corrupt be cured by laughter? And the day at Aranjuez, when the sun came out for once on the yellow river with Valdepeñas burdening the breath, we slept a royal sleep in the royal gardens. And at Toledo walked around the ramparts where they throw the garbage and glibly talked of how the Spaniards lack all sense of business. And Avila was cold, and Segovia was picturesque and smelly, and a goat on the road seemed old as the rocks or the Roman arches. And Easter was wet and full in Seville, and in the ring on Easter Sunday a clumsy bull, and then a clumsy bull nodding his banderillas died of boredom. And the standard of living was low, but that, we thought to ourselves, was not our business. All that the tripper wants is the status quo, cut and dried for trippers. We thought the papers a lark with their party politics and blank invective, and we thought the dark women who dyed their hair should have it dyed more often. And we sat in trains all night with the windows shut among civil guards and peasants, and tried to play piquet by a tiny light, and tried to sleep bolt upright, and cursed the Spanish rain, and cursed their cigarettes which came to pieces, and caught heavy coals in Cordoba, and in vain waited for the right light for taking photos. And we met a Cambridge don who said with an air, "There's going to be trouble shortly in this country," and ordered anise, podgy and debonair, glad to show off his mastery of the language. But only an inch behind this map of olive and ilex, this painted hoarding, careless of visitors, the people's mind was tunnelling like a mole to day and danger. And the day before we left, we saw the mob in flower at Algeciras outside a toothless door, a church bereft of its images and its aura. And at La Linea, while the night put miles between us and Gibraltar, we heard the bloodlust of a drunkard pile his heaven high with curses, and next day took the boat for home, forgetting Spain, not realising that Spain would soon denote our grief, our aspirations, not knowing that our blunt ideals would find their whetstone, that our spirit would find its frontier on the Spanish front, its body in a ragtag army.
Which have been put before them in the German memorandum. Yet I believe, after my talks with Herr Hitler, that after this Sudeten German question is settled, that is the end of Germany's territorial claims in Europe.
Conferences, adjournments, ultimatums, flights in the air, castles in the air. The autopsy of treaties, dynamite under the bridges, the end of laissez-faire. After the warm days, the rain comes, pimpling the paving stones with white, and with the rain, the national conscience, creeping, seeping through the night. And in the sodden park on Sunday, protest meetings assemble not, as so often, now merely to advertise some patent panacea, but simply to avow the need to hold the ditch. A bare avowal that may perhaps imply death at the doors in a week, but perhaps in the long run, exposure of the lie. Think of a number. Double it, treble it, square it, and sponge it out, and repeat ad lib, and mark the slate with crosses. There is no time to doubt if the puzzle really has an answer. Hitler yells on the wireless. The night is damp and still, and I hear dull blows on wood outside my window. They are cutting down the trees on Primrose Hill. The wood is white like the roast flesh of chicken. Each tree falling like a closing fan. No more looking at the view from seats beneath the branches. Everything is going to plan. They want the crest of this hill for anti-aircraft. The guns will take the view, and searchlights probe the heavens for bacilli with narrow wands of blue. And the rain came on as I watched the territorials sawing and chopping and pulling on ropes like a team in a village tug of war, and I found my dog had vanished and thought this is the end of the old regime, but found the police had got her at St. John's Wood Station and fetched her in the rain and went for a cup of coffee to an all-night shelter and heard a taxi driver say, "It turns me up when I see these soldiers in lorries. rumble of tumbrils, drums in the trees, breaking the eardrums of the ravished dryads. It turns me up. A coffee, please. And as I go out, I see a windscreen wiper in an empty car, wiping away like mad, and I feel astounded that things have gone so far. And I come back here to my flat and I wonder whether, from now on, I need take the trouble to go out choosing stuff for curtains, as I don't know anyone to make curtains quickly. Rather, one should quickly stop the cracks for gas or dig a trench and take one's paltry measures against the coming of the unknown Übermensch. But one, meaning I, is bored. I'm bored. The issue involving principle, but bound in fact to squander principle in panic and self-deception. Accessories after the act. So that all we foresee is rivers in spate sprouting with drowning hands and men like dead frogs floating till the rivers lose themselves in the sands. And we, who have been brought up to think of gallant Belgium as so much blag, are now preparing again to essay good through evil for the sake of Prague, and must, we suppose, become uncritical, vindictive, and must, in order to beat the enemy, model ourselves upon the enemy, a howling radio for our paraclete. The night continues wet. The axe keeps falling. The hill grows bald and bleak, no longer one of the sights of London, but maybe we shall have fireworks here by this day week.
I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine.
Sun shines easy. Sun shines gay on bug house, warehouse, brewery, market, or the chocolate factory and the BSA. On the Greek Town Hall and Josiah Mason, on the Mitchells and Butlers Tudor pubs, on the white police and the one-way traffic, and glances off the chromium hubs and the metal studs in the sleek MacAdam. 8 years back about this time, I came to live in this hazy city, to work in a building caked with grime, teaching the classics to Midland students. Virgil, Livy, the usual round, principal parts and the lost Digamma, and to hear the prison-like lecture room resound to Homer in a Dudley accent. But life was comfortable. Life was fine, with two in a bed and patchwork cushions, and checks and tassels on the washing line, a gramophone, a cat, and the smell of jasmine. The steaks were tender, the films were fun, the walls were striped like a Russian ballet. There were lots of things undone, but nobody cared, for the days were early. Nobody niggled. Nobody cared. The soul was deaf to the mounting debit. The soul was unprepared. But the firelight danced on the plywood ceiling. We drove round Shropshire in a Bijou car. Bewdley, Clibbery Mortimer, Ludlow. And the map of England was a toy bazaar. And the telephone wires were idle music. And sun shone easy. Sun shone hard on quickly dropping pear tree blossom and pigeons courting in the cobbled yard with flashing necks and notes of thunder. We slept in linen. We cooked with wine. We paid in cash and took no notice of how the train ran down the line into the sun against the signal. We lived in Birmingham through the slump. Line your boots with a piece of paper. Sunlight dancing on the rubbish dump. On the queues of men and the hungry chimneys. And the next election came. Labour defeats in Erdington and Aston. And life went on. For us, went on the same. Who were we to count the losses? Some went back to work and the void took on shape, while others climbing the uphill nights of the unemployed woke in the morning to factory hooters. Little on the plate, nothing in the post. queue in the rain or try the public library where the eye may coast columns of print for a hopeful harbour. But roads ran easy, roads ran gay, clear of the city, and we together could put on tweeds for a getaway south or west to Clee or the Cotswolds. 40 to the gallon, into the green fields in the past of English history, flies in the bonnet and dust on the screen, and no look back to the burning city. That was then, and now is now. Here again on a passing visit, passing through, but how memory blocks the passage. Just as in 1931, sun shines easy, but I no longer dock it a place in the sun. No wife, no ivory tower, no funk hole. The night grows purple. The crisis hangs over the roofs like a Persian army, and all of Xenophon's parasangs would take us only an inch from danger. Blackout practice and ARP, newsboys driving a roaring business, the flapping paper snatched to see if anything has or has not happened. And I go to the Birmingham Hippodrome, packed to the roof and primed for laughter, and beautifully at home with the ukulele and the comic chestnuts. As pals we meet, as pals we part, embonpoint and a new tiara. The comedian spilling the apple cart of double entendre and doggerel verses, and the next day begins again with alarm and anxious listening to bulletins from distant, measured voices arguing for peace while the zero hour approaches, while the eagles gather and the petrol and oil and grease have all been applied and the vultures back the eagles. But once again, the crisis is put off and things look better when we feel negotiation is not vain. Save my skin and damn my conscience. And negotiation wins, if you can call it winning. And here we are, just as before, safe in our skins. Glory to God for Munich. And stocks go up, and wrecks are salved, and politicians' reputations go up like Jack on the Beanstalk. Only the checks go down, and without fighting.
God bless you, Mr. Chamberlain. We're all mighty proud of you. You look swell, holding your umbrella. All the world loves a wonderful fella. So carry on.
Now we are back to normal. Now the mind is back to the even tenor of the usual day, skidding no longer across the uneasy camber of the nightmare way. We are safe, though others have crashed the railings over the river ravine, their wheel tracks carve the bank, but after the event, all we can do is argue and count the widening ripples where they sank. October comes with rain whipping round the ankles in waves of white at night and filling the raw clay trenches. Parks of London are a nasty sight. In a week, I return to work, lecturing, coaching, as impresario of the ancient Greeks who wore the chiton and lived on fish and olives and talked philosophy or smut and cliques, who believed in youth and did not gloze the unpleasant consequences of age. What is life, one said, or what is pleasant once you have turned the page of love? The days grow worse. The dice are loaded against the living man who pays in tears for breath. Never to be born was the best. Call no man happy this side death. Conscious, long before Engels, of necessity and therein free, they plotted out their life with truism and humour between the jealous heaven and the callous sea. And Pindar sang the garland of wild olive, and Alcibiades lived from hand to mouth, double-crossing Athens, Persia, Sparta, and many died in the city of plague, and many of drought in Sicilian quarries, and many by the spear and arrow, and many more who told their lies too late, caught in the eternal factions and reactions of the city-state. And free speech shivered on the pikes of Macedonia and later on the swords of Rome, and Athens became a mere university city, and the goddess born of the foam became the kept Hetaira, heroine of Menander, and the philosopher narrowed his focus, confined his efforts to putting his own soul in order and keeping a quiet mind. And for 1,000 years they went on talking, making such apt remarks. A race no longer of heroes, but of professors and crooked businessmen and secretaries and clerks who turned out dapper little elegiac verses on the ironies of fate, the transience of all affections, carefully shunning an overstatement, but working the dying fall. The glory that was Greece, put it in a syllabus, grade it page by page to train the mind or even to point a moral for the present age. Models of logic and lucidity, dignity, sanity, the golden mean between opposing ills, though there were exceptions, of course, but only exceptions, the bloody bacchanals on the Thracian hills. So the humanist in his room, with Jacobean panels, chewing his pipe and looking on a lazy quad, chops the ancient world to turn a sermon to the greater glory of God. But I can do nothing so useful or so simple. These dead are dead, and when I should remember the paragons of Hellas, I think instead of the crooks, the adventurers, the opportunists, the careless athletes and the fancy boys, the hair splitters, the pedants, the hard-boiled sceptics, and the agora, and the noise of the demagogues and the quacks, and the women pouring libations over graves, and the trimmers at Delphi, and the dummies at Sparta. And lastly, I think of the slaves. And how one can imagine oneself among them, I do not know. It was all so unimaginably different, and all so long ago.
Tempus erect, quo prima qui eis mortalibus egris.
Tempus erect, quo prima qui eis mortalibus egris.
And so returned to work. The MA gown, alphas and betas, central heating, floor polish, Demosthenes on the crown, and Oedipus at Colonus. And I think of the beginnings of other terms, coming across the sea to unknown England, and memory reaffirms that alarm and exhilaration of arrival. White wooden boxes, clatter of boots, a smell of changing rooms, lifebuoy soap and muddy flannels, and over all a bell dragooning us to dormitory or classroom, ringing with a tongue of frost across the bare benches and desks escutcheoned with initials. We sat on hot pipes by the wall, aware of the cold in our bones and the noise and the bell impending. A fishtail gas flare in the dark latrine, chalk and ink and rows of pegs and lockers. The war was on, maize and margarine and lessons on the map of Flanders. But we had our toys, our electric torches, our glass, dogs and cats, and plasticine and conkers, and we had our games. We learned to dribble and pass in jerseys striped like tigers. And we had our make-believe. We had our mock freedom in walks by twos and threes on Sunday. We dug out fossils from the yellow rock or drank the Dorset distance. And we had our little tiptoe minds, alert to jump for facts and fancies and statistics, and our little jokes of Billy Bunter dirt and a heap of homemade dogma. The abbey chimes varnished the yellow street. The water from the taps in the bath was yellow. The trees were full of owls. The sweets were sweet and life an expanding ladder. And reading romances, we longed to be grown up, to shoot from the hip and marry lovely ladies, and smoke cigars and live on claret cup and lie in bed in the morning, taking it for granted that things would still get better and bigger and better and bigger and better, that the road across the hill led to the Garden of Eden. Everything to expect and nothing to deplore. Cushy days beyond the dumb horizon and nothing to doubt about to linger for in the halfway house of childhood. And certainly we did not linger. We went on growing and growing, gluttons for the future. And 4'6" was gone, and we found it was time to be leaving, to be changing school. Sandstone changed for chalk and ammonites for the flinty husks of sponges. Another lingo to talk, and jerseys in other colours. And still the acquiring of unrelated facts. A string of military dates for history, and the Gospels, and the Acts, and logarithms, and Greek, and the Essays of Elia. And still the exhilarating rhythm of free movement, swimming or serving at tennis, the five courts tattling repartee or rain on the sweating body. But life began to narrow to what was done. Dominant gerundive. And number two must mimic number one in bearing, swearing, attitude and accent. And so we jettisoned all our childish fantasies and anarchism. The weak must go to the wall, but strength implies the system. You must lose your soul to be strong. You cannot stand alone on your own legs or your own ideas. The order of the day is complete conformity and an automatic complacence. Such was the order of the day. Only at times the fool among the yes-men flashed his motley to prick their pseudo-reason with his rhymes and drop his grain of salt on court behaviour. And sometimes a whisper in books would challenge the code, or a censored memory, sometimes. Sometimes the explosion of rooks. Sometimes the mere batter of light on the senses. And the critic, jailed in the mind, would peep through the grate and husky from long silence, murmur gently that there is something rotten in the state of Denmark. But the state is not the whole of Denmark, and a spade is still a spade, and the difference is not final between a tailored suit and a ready-made, and knowledge is not necessarily wisdom. And a cultured accent alone will not provide a season ticket to the Vita Nuova. And there are many better men outside than ever answered roll call. But the critic did not win, has not won yet, though always reminding us of points forgotten. We hasten to forget as much as he remembers. And school was what they always said it was, an apprenticeship to life, an initiation, and all the better because the initiates were blindfold. The reflex action of a dog or sheep being enough for normal avocations and life rotating in an office sleep as long as things are normal, which it was assumed they would always be. On that assumption, terms began and ended. And now, in 1938 AD, term is again beginning.
The light of civilized progress, with its tolerances and cooperation, with its dignities and joys, has often been blotted out. But I hold the belief that we have now at last got far enough ahead of barbarism to control it and to avert it, if only we realize what is afoot.
But work is alien. What do I care for the master of those who know, of those who know too much? I am too harassed by my familiar devils, by those I cannot see, by those I may not touch. Knowing perfectly well in the mind, on paper, how wistful and absurd are personal fixations, but yet the pulse keeps thrumming and her voice is faintly heard through walls and walls of indifference and abstraction and across the London roofs, and every so often calls up hopes from nowhere, a distant clatter of hooves, and my common sense denies she is returning and says, if she does return, she will not stay. And my pride, in the name of reason, tells me to cut my losses and call it a day, which, if I had the cowardice of my convictions, I certainly should do, but doubt still finds a loophole to gamble on another rendezvous. And I try to feel her in fancy, but the fancy dissolves in curls of mist. And I try to summarize her, but how can hungry love be a proper analyst? For suddenly I hate her and would murder her memory if I could. And then of a sudden I see her sleeping gently, inaccessible in a sleeping wood. But thorns and thorns around her and the cries of night. And I have no knife or axe to hack my passage back to the lost delight. And then I think of the others, and jealousy riots in impossible schemes to kill them with all the machinery of fact and with all the tortures of dreams. But yet, my dear, if only for my own distraction, I have to try to assess your beauty of body, your paradoxes of spirit, even your taste in dress, whose emotions are an intricate dialectic, whose eagerness to live a many-sided life might be deplored as fickle, unpractical, or merely inquisitive. A superficial comment, for your instinct sanctions all you do, who know that truth is nothing in abstraction, that action makes both wish and principle come true, whose changes have the logic of a prism, whose moods create, who never linger haggling on the threshold to weigh the pros and cons until it is too late. At times intractable, virulent, hypercritical, with a bitter tongue, overshy at times, morose, defeatist, at times a token that the world is young, given to overstatement, careless of caution, quick to sound the chimes of delicate intuition, at times malicious and generous at times, whose kaleidoscopic ways are all authentic, whose truth is not of a statement but of a dance, so that even when you deceive, your deceits are merely technical and of no significance. And so, when I think of you, I have to meet you in thought on your own ground. To apply to you my algebraic canons would merely be unsound, and, having granted this, I cannot balance my hopes or fears of you in pros and cons. It has been proved that Achilles cannot catch the tortoise. It has been proved that men are automatons. Everything wrong has been proved. I will not bother any more with proof. I see the future glinting with your presence, like moon on a slate roof, and my spirits rise again. It is October. The year god dying on the destined pyre, with all the colours of a scrambled sunset and the funeral elegance of fire in the grey world, to lie cocooned but shaping his gradual return. No one can stop the cycle. The grate is full of ash, but fire will always burn. Therefore, listening to the taxis, in which you never come, so regularly pass, I wait, content, banking on the spring and watching the dead leaves canter over the dirty grass.
I have been out in the zones being occupied through the Czech troops moving back as they evacuate. Prague itself is very quiet. The people talk a great deal, solemnly, quietly, rather reservedly about what has happened to them and what is happening to their country. And there are some extra police about. There are refugees up in the big stadium on the hill above the left bank of the river.
These days are misty, insulated, mute like a faded tapestry, and the soft petal is down, and the yellow leaves are falling down, and we hardly have the heart to meddle any more with personal ethics or public calls. People have not recovered from the crisis. Their faces are far away. The tone of the words belies their thesis. For they say that now it is time unequivocally to act, to let the pawns be taken, that criticism, a virtue previously, now can only weaken, and that when we go to Rome we must do as the Romans do, cry out together for bread and circuses, put on your togas now, for this is Roman weather. Circuses of death, and from the topmost tiers, a cataract of goggling, roaring faces. On the arena sand, those who are about to die try out their paces. Now it is night. A cold mist creeps. The night is still and damp and lonely. Sitting by the fire, it is hard to realise that the legions wait at the gates and that there is only a little time for rest, though not by rights for rest. Rather, for wetting the will, for calculating and compromise between necessity and wish, apprenticed late to learn the trade of hating. Remember the sergeant barking at bayonet practice when you were small? To kill a dummy, you must act a dummy, or you cut no ice at all. Now it is morning again, the 25th of October. In a white fog, the cars have yellow lights. The chill creeps up the wrists, the sun is sallow, the silent hours grow down like stalactites. And reading Plato talking about his forms, to damn the artist touting round his mirror, I am glad that I have been left the third best bed and live in a world of error. His world of capital initials, of transcendent ideas, is too bleak. For me, there remain, to all intents and purposes, 7 days in the week, and no one Tuesday is another. And you destroy it if you subtract the difference and relate it merely to the form of Tuesday. This is Tuesday, the 25th of October, 1938. Aristotle was better, who watched the insect breed, the natural world develop, stressing the function, scrapping the form in itself, taking the horse from the shelf and letting it gallop. Education gives us too many labels and clichés, cuts too many Gordian knots, drains us to keep the roads nor reconnoitre any of the beauty spots or danger spots. Not that I would rather be a peasant, the happy peasant, like the noble savage, is a myth. I do not envy the self-possession of an elm tree, nor the aplomb of a granite monolith. All that I would like to be is human, having a share in a civilized, articulate, and well-adjusted community where the mind is given its due, but the body is not distrusted. As it is, the so-called humane studies may lead to cushy jobs, but leave the men who land them spiritually bankrupt intellectual snobs. Not but what I am glad to have my comforts. Better authentic mammon than a bogus god. If it were not for Lit Hum, I might be climbing a ladder with a hod. And 700 a year will pay the rent, the gas, the phone, and the grocer. The emperor takes his seat beneath the awning. Those who are about to die. Come, pull the curtains closer.
The Fascist Grand Council ended its meeting at Rome in the early hours of this morning. In a communique issued afterwards, the Council sent a message of goodwill to Japan after the victories at Canton and Hankow. It was also announced that Libya will have its status changed so that its 4 provinces become part of the national territory.
Which things being so, as we said when we studied the classics, I ought to be glad that I studied the classics at Marlborough and Merton, not everyone here having had the privilege of learning a language that is incontrovertibly dead, and of carting a toy box of hallmarked memorial phrases around in his head. We wrote compositions in Greek, which they said was a lesson in logic and good for the brain. We marched, countermarched, to the field marshal's blue pencil baton. We dressed by the right, and we wrote out the sentence again. We learned that a gentleman never misplaces his accents, that nobody knows how to speak, much less how to write English, who is not hobnobbed with the great-grandparents of English, that the boy on the modern side is merely a parasite, but the classical student is bred to the purple. His training in syntax is also a training in thought and even in morals. If called to the bar or the barracks, he always will do what he ought. And knowledge, besides, should be prized for the sake of knowledge. Oxford crowded the mantelpiece with gods. Scaliger, Heinsius, Dindorf, Bentley, and Wilamowitz, as we learned our genuflections for honour mauds. And then they taught us philosophy, logic, and metaphysics, the negative judgment and the ding and sick. And every single thinker was as powerful as Napoleon and crafty as Metternich. And it really was very attractive to be able to talk about tables and to ask if the table is, and to draw the cork out of an old conundrum and watch the paradoxes fizz. And it made one confident to think that nothing really was what it seemed under the sun, that the actual was not real, and the real was not with us, and all that mattered was the one. And they said, the man in the street is so naive, he never can see the wood for the trees. He thinks he knows he sees a thing, but cannot tell you how he knows the thing he thinks he sees. And oh, how much I liked the concrete universal. I never thought that I should be telling them, vice versa, that they can't see the trees for the wood. But certainly it was fun while it lasted, and I got my honours degree and was stamped as a person of intelligence and culture. For ever, wherever two or three persons of intelligence and culture are gathered together in talk, writing definitions on invisible blackboards in non-existent chalk. But such sacramental occasions are nowadays comparatively rare. There is always a wife, or a boss, or a dun, or a client disturbing the air. Barbarians always, life in the particular always, dozens of men in the street, and the perennial, if unimportant, problem of getting enough to eat. So blow the bugles over the metaphysicians, let the pure mind return to the pure mind. I must be content to remain in the world of appearance, and sit on the mere appearance of a behind. But in case you should think my education was wasted, I hasten to explain that having once been to the University of Oxford, you can never really again believe anything that anyone says, and that, of course, is an asset in a world like ours. Why bother to water a garden that is planted with paper flowers? Oh, the freedom of the press, the late night final, tomorrow's pulp. One should not gulp one's port, but as it isn't poured, I'll gulp it if I want to gulp, but probably I'll just enjoy the colour and pour it down the sink, for I don't call advertisement a statement or any quack medicine a drink. Goodbye now, Plato and Hegel. The shop is closing down. They don't want any philosopher kings in England. There ain't no universals in this man's town.
Flown around the world in a plane. I've settled revolutions in Spain. And the North Pole I have charted. Still I can't get started with you.
The next day I drove by night among red and amber and green. Spears and candles, corkscrews and slivers of reflected light in the mirror of the rainy asphalt, along the North Circular and the Great West Roads, running the gauntlet of impoverished fancy, where housewives bolster up their jerry-built abodes with amour propre and the habit of higher purchase. The wheels whished in the wet, the flashy strings of neon lights unraveled, the windscreen wiper kept at its job like a tiger in a cage or a cricket that sings all night through for nothing. Factory, a site for a factory. Rubbish dumps. Bungalows in lath and plaster, in brick, in concrete, and shining semicircles of petrol pumps like intransigent gangs of idols. And the road swings round my head like a lasso, looping wider and wider tracts of darkness. And the country succeeds the town, and the country too is damp and dark and evil. And coming over the chilterns, the dead leaves leap, charging the windscreen like a barrage of angry birds as I take the steep plunge to Henley or Hades. And at the curves of the road, the telephone wires shine like strands of silk, and the hedge solicits my irresponsible tires to an accident, to a bed in the wet grasses. And in quiet, crooked streets, only the village pub spills a golden puddle over the pavement, and trees bend down and rub unopened dormer windows with their knuckles. Nettlebed, Shillingford, Dorchester, each unrolls the road to Oxford. Kelly's your fair tomorrow, driving voters to the polls in that home of lost illusions. And what am I doing it for? Mainly for fun. Partly for a half-believed-in principle. A core of fact in a pulp of verbiage. Remembering that this crude and so-called obsolete, top-heavy, tedious parliamentary system is our only ready weapon to defeat the Legion's eagles and the lictor's axes. And remembering that those who by their habit hate politics can no longer keep their private values unless they open the public gate to a better political system. That Rome was not built in a day is no excuse for laissez-faire, for bowing to the odds against us. What is the use of asking? What is the use of one brick only? The perfectionist stands forever in a fog, waiting for the fog to clear. Better to be vulgar and use your legs and leave a blank for Hogg and put a cross for Lindsay. There are only too many who say, what difference does it make one way or the other? To turn the stream of history will take more than a by-election. So Thursday came, and Oxford went to the polls and made its coward vote, and the streets resounded to the triumphant cheers of the lost souls, the profiteers, the dunderheads, the smarties. And I drove back to London in the dark of the morning, the trees standing out in the headlights cut from cardboard, wondering which disease is worse, the status quo or the mere utopia. For from now on, each occasion must be used, however trivial, to rally the ranks of those whose chance will soon be gone for even guerrilla warfare. The nicest people in England have always been the least apt to solidarity or alignment, but all of them must now align against the beast that prowls at every door and barks in every headline. Dawn and London and daylight and last the sun. I stop the car and take the yellow placard off the bonnet. That little job is done, though without success or glory. The plane tree leaves come sidling down. Catch my guineas. Catch my guineas. And the sun caresses Camden Town, the barrows of oranges and apples.
Yesterday, we broadcast a reminder on the proper way to take care of the gas masks that have been distributed, and a warning against such strange misuses as testing the masks in gas ovens and by the exhaust pipes of motor cars.
Shelley, and jazz, and leader, and love, and hymn tunes, and day returns too soon. We'll get drunk among the roses in the valley of the moon. Give me an aphrodisiac, give me lotus, give me the same again. Make all the erotic poets of Rome and Ionia and Florence and Provence and Spain pay a tithe of their sugar to my potion and ferment my days with the twang of Hawaii and the boom of the Congo. Let the old muse loosen her stays or give me a new muse with stockings and suspenders and a smile like a cat. With false eyelashes and fingernails of carmine and dressed by Schiaparelli with a pillbox hat. Let the aces run riot round Brooklands. Let the tape machines go drunk. Turn on the purple spotlight. Pull out the Vox Humana. Dig up somebody's body in a cloakroom trunk. Give us sensations. And then again, sensations. Striptease. Fireworks. All in wrestling. Gin.
spend your capital, open your house and pawn your padlocks. Let the critical sense go out and the roaring boys come in. Give me a hurry, but hurries are too easy. Give me a nun, we'll rip the angels off the golden reredos before we're done. Tiger women and Lesbos, drums and entrails, and let the skies rotate. We'll play roulette with the stars. We'll sit out drinking at the hangman's gate. Oh, look who comes here. I cannot see their faces walking in file, slowly in file. They have no shoes on their feet. The knobs of their ankles catch the moonlight as they pass the stile and cross the moor among the skeletons of bog oak, following the track from the gallows back to town. Each has the end of a rope around his neck. I wonder who let these men come back, who cut them down. Now they reach the gate and line up opposite the neon lights on the medieval wall, and underneath the sky signs, each one takes his cowl and lets it fall. And we see their faces, each the same as the other, men and women, each like a closed door. Something about their faces is familiar. Where have we seen them before? Was it the murderer on the nursery ceiling? Or Judas Iscariot in the field of blood? Or someone at Gallipoli or in Flanders, caught in the end all mud? But take no notice of them. Out with the ukulele, the saxophone and the dice. They are sure to go away if we take no notice. Another round of drinks or make it twice. That was a good one. Tell us another. Don't stop talking. Cap your stories. If you haven't any new ones, tell us the old ones. Tell them as often as you like, and perhaps those horrible, stiff people with blank faces that are yet familiar won't be there when you look again. But don't look just yet. Just give them time to vanish. I said to vanish. What do you mean? They won't. Give us the songs of Harlem or of Mytilene, pearls and wine. There can't be a hell unless there is a heaven, and a devil would have to be divine, and there can't be such things one way or the other. That we know. You can't step in the same river twice, so there can't be ghosts. Thank God that rivers always flow. Sufficient to the moment is the moment. Past and future merely don't make sense, and yet I thought I had seen them. But how, if there is only a present tense? Come on, boys, we aren't afraid of bogeys. Give us another drink. This little lady has a fetish. She goes to bed in mink. This little pig went to market. Now, I think you may look. I think the coast is clear. Well, why don't you answer? I can't answer because they are still there. Nightmare leaves fatigue. We envy men of action who sleep and wake, murder and intrigue, without being doubtful, without being haunted. And I envy the intransigence of my own countrymen who shoot to kill and never see the victim's face become their own or find his motive sabotage their motives. So reading the memoirs of Maud Gonne, daughter of an English mother and a soldier father, I note how a single purpose can be founded on a jumble of opposites. Dublin Castle, the Viceregal Ball, the embassies of Europe, hatred scribbled on a wall, jails and revolvers. And I remember, when I was little, the fear bandied among the servants that Casement would land at the pier with a sword and a horde of rebels, and how we used to expect, at a later date, when the wind blew from the west,
the noise of shooting starting in the evening at 8 in Belfast in the York Street district, and the voodoo of the orange bands drawing an iron net through darkest Ulster, flailing the limbo lands, the linen mills, the long wet grass, the ragged hawthorn. And one red black with the other red white, his hope, the other man's damnation. Up the rebels, to hell with the Pope, and God save, as you prefer, the King or Ireland. The land of scholars and saints. Scholars and saints, my eye. The land of ambush. Purblind manifestos, never-ending complaints, the born martyr and the gallant ninny, the grocer drunk with the drum, the landowner shot in his bed, the angry voices piercing the broken fanlight in the slum, the shawled woman weeping at the garish altar. Kathleen Nahoolan. Why must a country, like a ship or a car, be always female, mother or sweetheart? A woman passing by, we did but see her passing. Passing like a patch of sun on the rainy hill, and yet we love her forever and hate our neighbour, and each one in his will binds his heirs to continuance of hatred. Drums in the haycock, drums in the harvest, black drums in the night shaking the windows. King William is riding his white horse back to the Boyne on a banner. Thousands of banners, thousands of white horses, thousands of Williams waving thousands of swords and ready to fight till the blue sea turns to orange. Such was my country, and I thought I was well out of it, educated and domiciled in England, though yet her name keeps ringing like a bell in an underwater belfry. Why do we like being Irish? Partly because it gives us a hold on the sentimental English as members of a world that never was, baptised with fairy water. And partly because Ireland is small enough to be still thought of with a family feeling, and because the waves are rough that splitter from a more commercial culture, and because one feels that here, at least, one can do local work which is not at the world's mercy, and that on this tiny stage, with luck, a man might see the end of one particular action. It is self-deception, of course. There is no immunity in this island either. A cart that is drawn by somebody else's horse and carrying goods to somebody else's market, the bombs in the turnip sack, the sniper from the roof, Griffith, Connolly, Collins, where have they brought us? Ourselves alone? Let the round tower stand aloof in a world of bursting mortar. Let the school children fumble their sums in a half-dead language. Let the censor be busy on the books, pull down the Georgian slums. Let the games be played in Gaelic. Let them grow beet sugar. Let them build a factory in every hamlet. Let them pigeonhole the souls of the killed into sheep and goats, patriots and traitors. And the north, where I was a boy, is still the north, veneered with the grime of Glasgow, thousands of men whom nobody will employ, standing at the corners, coughing. And the street children play on the wet pavement, hopscotch or marbles, and each rich family boasts a sagging tennis net on a spongy lawn beside a dripping shrubbery. The smoking chimneys hint at prosperity round the corner, but they make their Ulster linen from foreign lint, and the money that comes in goes out to make more money. A city built on mud, a culture built upon profit, free speech nipped in the bud, the minority always guilty. Why should I want to go back to you, Ireland? My Ireland? The blots on the page are so black that they cannot be covered with shamrock. I hate your grandiose airs, your sob stuff, your laugh and your swagger, your assumption that everyone cares who is the king of your castle. Castles are out of date. The tide flows round the children's sandy fancy. Put up what flag you like. It is too late to save your soul with bunting. Odi atque amo. Shall we cut this name on trees with a rusty dagger? Her mountains are still blue. Her rivers flow, bubbling over the boulders. She is both a bore and a bitch. Better close the horizon. Send her no more fantasy, no more longings which are under a fatal tariff. For common sense is the vogue, and she gives her children neither sense nor money, who slouch around the world with a gesture and a brogue and a faggot of useless memories.
There was scores of pretty Irish girls from Cork to Donegal, but the prettiest and the neatest and the sweetest of them all is a charming little collie who is neither short nor tall. She's the pride of all the boys in Tipperary.
From the second floor up, looking north, having breakfast, I see the November sun at 9 o'clock gild the fusty brickwork of rows on rows of houses like animals asleep and breathing smoke. And savouring well-being, I light my first cigarette, grow giddy and blink, glad of this titillation, this innuendo, this make-believe of standing on a brink. For all our trivial daily acts are altered into heroic or romantic make-believe, of which we are hardly conscious. Who is it calls me when the cold draught picks my sleeve? Or sneezing in the morning sunlight, or smelling the bonfire over the webbed lawn and the naked cabbage plot, or stepping into a fresh filled bath with strata of cold water and hot. We lie in the bath between tiled walls and under ascending scrolls of steam and feel the ego merge as the pores open. And we lie in the bath and dream. And responsibility dies, and the thighs are happy, and the body purrs like a cat. But this lagoon grows cold. We have to leave it, stepping onto a Czech rug on a cork mat. The luxury life is only to be valued by those who are short of money, are pressed for time as the cinema gives the poor their Jacob's ladder for Cinderella's to climb. And Plato was right to define the bodily pleasures as the pouring water into a hungry sieve, but wrong to ignore the rhythm which the intercrossing coloured waters permanently give. And Aristotle was right to posit the alter ego, but wrong to make it only a halfway house. Who could expect or want to be spiritually self-supporting? Eternal self-abuse. Why not admit that other people are always organic to the self, that a monologue is the death of language, and that a single lion is less himself or alive than a dog and another dog? Virtue going out of us always. The eyes grow weary with vision, but it is vision builds the eye. And in a sense, the children kill their parents, but do the parents die? And the beloved destroys like fire or water, but water scours and sculpts, and fire refines. And if you're going to read the testaments of cynics, you must read between the lines. A point here and a point there. The current jumps the gap. The ego cannot live without becoming other, for the other has got yourself to give. And even the sense of taste provides communion with God as plant or beast. The sea in fish, the field in a salad of endive, a sacramental feast. The soul's long searchlight hankers for a body. The single body hungers for its kind. The eye demands the light at the risk of blindness, and the mind that did not doubt would not be mind, and discontent is eternal. In luxury or business, in family or sexual love, in purchases or prayers, our virtue is invested. The self put out at interest, the returns are never enough. The fact compares so badly with the fancy, yet fancy itself is only a divination of fact. And if we confine the world to the prophet's tripod, the subjects of our prophecy contract.
Open the world wide, open the senses, let the soul stretch its blind enormous arms. There is vision in the fingers only needing waking, ready for light's alarms. Oh, light, terror of light, hoofs and ruthless wheels of steel and brass dragging behind you lacerated captives who also share your triumph as you pass. Light, which is time, belfry of booming sunlight. The ropes run up and down. The whole town shakes with the peal of living people who break and build the town. Aristotle was right to think of man in action as the essential and really existent man. And man means men in action. Try and confine yourself to yourself if you can. Nothing is self-sufficient. Pleasure implies hunger, but hunger implies hope. I cannot lie in this bath forever, clouding the cooling water with rose geranium soap. I cannot drug my life with the present moment. The present moment may rape, but all in vain, the future. For the future remains a virgin who must be tried again.
We met to discuss air raid precautions. We thought that arrangements in the first place should centre on the children. It was our general view that the best way would be to move children, whose parents were willing, from the crowded areas where danger is greatest.
In the days that were early, the music came easy, on cradle and coffin, in the corn and the barn. Songs for the reaping and spinning, and only the shepherd, then as now, was silent beside the tarn. Cuffs of foam around the beer brown water, crinkled water and a mackerel sky. It is all in the day's work, the grey stones in heather, and the sheep that breed and break their legs and die. The uplands, now as then, are fresh, but in the valley, polluted rivers run. The lethe and the Styx. The soil is tired, and the profit little, and the hunchback bobs on a cart horse round the sodden ricks. Sing us no more idylls, no more pastorals, no more epics of the English earth. The country is a dwindling annex to the factory, squalid as an afterbirth. This England is tight and narrow, teeming with unwanted children who are so many, each is alone. Niobe and her children stand beneath the smokestack turned to stone. And still the church bells brag above the empty churches, and the Union Jack thumps the wind above the law courts and the barracks, and in the allotments the black scarecrow holds a fort of grimy heads of cabbage, besieged by grimy birds, like a hack politician fighting the winged aggressor with yesterday's magic coat of ragged words. Things were different when men felt their programme in the bones and pulse, not only in the brain. Born to a trade, a belief, a set of affections. That instinct for belief may sprout again. There are some who have never lost it, and some who foster or force it into growth. But most of us lack the right discontent, contented merely to cavil. Spiritual sloth creeps like lichen or ivy over the hinges of the doors, which never move. We cannot even remember who is behind them, nor even, soon, shall have the chance to prove if anyone at all is behind them. The Sleeping Beauty, or the Holy Ghost, or the greatest happiness of the greatest number. All we can do, at most, is press an anxious ear against the keyhole to hear the future breathing. Softly tread in the outer porch beneath the marble volutes. Who knows if God, as Nietzsche said, is dead?
There is straw to lay in the streets. Call the hunchback, the gentleman farmer, the village idiot, the Shropshire lad, to insulate us, if they can, with coma before we all go mad. What shall we pray for, Lord? Whom shall we pray to? If everything that happens, happens according to the nature and wish of God, then God must go. Lay your straw in the streets and go about your business, an inch at a time, an inch at a time. We have not even an hour to spend repenting our sins. The quarters chime, and every minute is its own alarm clock. And what we are about to do is of vastly more importance than what we have done or not done hitherto. It is December now. The trees are naked as the three crosses on the hill. Through the white fog, the face of the orange sun is cryptic like a lawyer making the year's will. The year has little to show. We leave a heavy overdraft to its heir. Shall we try to meet the deficit, or, passing by on the other side, continue lazy fare? International betrayals, public murder, the devil quoting scripture, the traitor, the coward, the thug, eating dinner in the name of peace and progress, the doped public sucking a dry dug, official recognition of rape, revival of the ghetto, and free speech gagged and free energy scrapped and dropped like surplus herring back into the barren sea, brains and beauty festering in exile, the shadow of bars falling across each page, each field, each rattled sunset, the alien lawn and the pool of nenuphars, and hordes of homeless poor running the gauntlet in hostile city streets of white and violet lamps, whose flight is without a terminus, but better than the repose of concentration camps. Come over, they said, into Macedonia and help us, but the chance is gone. Now we must help ourselves. We can leave the vulture to pick the corpses clean in Macedon. No wonder many would renounce their birthright, the responsibility of moral choice, and sit with a mess of pottage, taking orders out of a square box from a mad voice. Lies on the air, endlessly repeated, turning the air to fog, blanket on blanket of lie, no room to breathe or fidget, and nobody to jog your elbow and say, up there the sun is rising, take it on trust, the sun will always shine. The sun may shine, no doubt, but how many people will see it with their eyes in 1939? Yes, the earlier days had their music. We have some still today, but the orchestra is due for the bonfire if things go on this way. Still, there are still the seeds of energy and choice still alive, even if forbidden, hidden. And while a man has voice, he may recover music.
And now we're taking you over to the Locarno Stratum to learn something of the latest dances. Here's one you can all dance. And it's sweeping the country, the Lambeth Walk. Blimey, you simply can't help joining in if your heart's in the right place and your feet don't hurt.
The pigeons riddle the London air. The shutter slides from the chain store window. The frock-coat statue stands in the square, caring for no one, caring for no one. The night shift men go home to bed. The kettle sings and the bacon sizzles. Some are hungry and some are dead. A wistful face in a faded photo. Under the stairs is a khaki cap. That was Dad's. Dad was a plumber. You hear that dripping tap? He'd have had it right in no time. No time now. Dad is dead. He left me 5 months gone or over. Tamcari capitis. For such a well-loved head, what shame and tears. What limit. It is the child, I mean. Born prematurely, strangled. Dad was off the scene. He would have made no difference. The stretchers run from ward to ward. The telephone rings on empty houses. The torn shirt soaks on the scrubbing board. Oh, what a busy morning. Baby Croesus crawls in a pan with alphabetical bricks and biscuits. The doll-dumb file of sandwich men carry lies from gutter to gutter. The curate buys his ounce of shag. The typist tints her nails with coral. The housewife with her shopping bag watches the cleaver catch the naked New Zealand sheep between the legs. What price now, New Zealand? The cocker spaniel sits and begs with eyes like a whiff on the movies. Oh, what a busy morning. Engines start with a roar. All the wires are buzzing. The tip machines vomit on the floor. And I feel that my mind once again is open. The lady is gone who stood in the way so long. The hypnosis is over and no one calls encore to the song. When we are out of love, how were we ever in it? Where are the mountains and the mountain skies? That heady air instinct with a strange sincerity which winged our lives. The peaks have fallen in like dropping pastry. Now I could see her come around the corner without the pulse responding. The flowery orator in the heart is dumb. His bag of tricks is empty. His overstatements, those rainbow bubbles, have burst. When we meet, she need not feel embarrassed. The cad with the golden tongue has done his worst and has no orders from me to mix his phrases rich. To make the air a carpet for her to walk on. I only wonder which day, which hour, I found this freedom. But freedom is not so exciting. We prefer to be drawn in the rush of the stars as they circle, a traffic that ends with dawn. Now I am free of the stars, and the word love makes no sense. This history is almost ripe for the mind's museum. Broken jars that once held wine or perfume. Yet, looking at their elegance on the stands, I feel a certain pride that only lately, and yet not so long ago, I held them in my hands while they were full and fragrant. So, on this busy morning, I hope, my dear, that you were also busy with another vintage of another year. I wish you luck and I thank you for the party. A good party, though at the end my thirst was worse than at the beginning. But never to have drunk, no doubt, would be the worst. Pain, they say, is always twin to pleasure. Better to have these twins than no children at all. Very much better to act for good and bad than have no sins and take no action either. You were my blizzard, who had been my bed. But taking the whole series of blight and blossom, I would not choose a simpler crop instead. Thank you, my dear. Dear against my judgment. Nelson stands on a black pillar. The electric signs go off and on. Distilleries and life insurance companies. The traffic circles, coming and gone, past the National Gallery closed and silent, where in their frames other worlds persist. The passions of the artist, caught like frozen flames. The primitives distilling from the cruel legend a faith that is almost debonair. Sebastian calmly waiting the next arrow. The crucifixion in the candid air. And Venice lolling in wealth forever under glass. Pearls in her hair, panther and velvet. And the rococo picnic on the grass with wine and lutes and banter. And the still life proclaiming with aplomb the self-content of bread or fruit or vases and personality like a silent bomb. Lurking in the formal portrait. Here, every day, The visitors walk slowly, rocking along the parquet, as if on a ship's deck, feeling a vague affinity with the pictures, yet wary of these waves, which gently peck the side of the boat in passing. They are anxious to end the voyage, to land in their own time. The sea of the past glimmers with white horses, a paradigm of life's successions, treacheries, recessions, the unfounded confidence of the dead affronts our own system of values, like airmen doing their stunts over our private garden. These arrogant old masters swoop and loop and lance us with a quick shadow. We only want to cultivate our garden, not for us, the virtuoso, slick tricks of the airy region. For our part, our feet are on the ground. They should not be allowed to fly so low above us. Their premises are unsound, and history has refuted them, and yet they cast their shadows on us like aspersions. Propellers and white horses, movement, movement. Can we never forget the movements of the past which should be dead? The mind of Socrates still clicks like scissors, and Christ, who should lie quiet in the garden, flowered in flame instead. A week to Christmas, cards of snow and holly, gimcracks in the shops, wishes and memories wrapped in tissue paper, trinkets, gadgets, and lollipops, and as if through coloured glasses, we remember our childhood's thrill, waking in the morning to the rustling of paper, the eiderdown heaped in a hill of wogs and dogs, and bears and bricks, and apples, and the feeling that Christmas Day was a coral island in time, where we land and eat our lotus, but where we can never stay. There was a star in the east. The magi in their turbans brought their luxury toys in homage to a child born to capsize their values and wreck their equipoise. A smell of hay like peace in the dark stable. Not peace, however, but a sword to cut the Gordian knot of logical self-interest, the foolproof golden cord. For Christ walked in where no philosopher treads, but armed with more than folly, making the smooth place rough and knocking the heads of church and state together. In honour of whom we have taken over the pagan Saturnalia for our annual treat, letting the belly have its say, ignoring the spirit while we eat. And conscience still goes crying through the desert with sackcloth round his loins. A week to Christmas, hark the herald angels, beg for copper coins. And when we clear away all this debris of day-by-day experience, what comes out to light? What is there of value lasting from day to day? I sit in my room in comfort, looking at enormous flowers, equipment purchased with my working hours, a daily mint of perishable petals. The figures of the dance repeat the unending cycle of making and spending money, eating our daily bread in order to earn it, and earning in order to eat. And is that all the story, the mainspring and the plot, or merely a mechanism without which not any story could be written? Sine qua non indeed. We cannot ever live by soul alone. The soul without the stomach would find its glory gone. But the total cause outruns the mere condition. There is more to it than that. Life would be, as it often seems, flat if it were merely a matter of not dying. For each individual, then, would be fighting a losing battle, but with life as collective creation? The rout is rallied, the battle begins again. Only give us the courage of our instinct, the will to truth, and love's initiative. Then we could hope to live a life beyond the self, but self-completing. In this room, chrysanthemums and dahlias, like brandy, hit the heart. The fire, a small wild animal, furthers its desire, consuming fuel, self-consuming. And flames are the clearest cut of shapes and the most transient. O fire, my spendthrift, may I spend like you, as reckless but giving as good return, burn the silent into running sound, deride the dark and jump to glory from a single spark and purge the world and warm it. The room grows cold, the flicker fades, the sinking ashes whisper, the fickle eye forgets, but later will remember the radiant cavalcades. The smoke has gone from the chimney. The water has flowed away under the bridge. The silhouetted lovers have left the ridge. The flower has closed its calyx. The crow's feet have come to stay. The jokes no longer amuse. The palate rejects milk, chocolate, and Benedictine. Yesterday and the day before yesterday. But oh, not now, my love, but oh, my friend, can you not take it merely on trust that life is the only thing worth living and that dying had better be left to take care of itself in the end? For to have been born is in itself a triumph among all that waste of sperm, and it is gratitude to wait the proper term, or, if not gratitude, duty. I know that you think these phrases highfalutin and, when not happy, see no claim or use for staying alive. The quiet hands seduce of the God who is God of nothing. And while I sympathize with the wish to quit, to make the great refusal, I feel that such a defeat is also treason, that deaths like these are lies. A fire should be left burning till it burns itself out. We shan't have another chance to dance and shout once the flames are silent.
If you want toys like other little boys in your neighborhood, then don't wait till the night before Christmas to be good.
December the 19th. Over the black roofs and the one black paintbrush poplar, the white steam rises and deploys in puffs from the house hidden railway. A northern geyser erupting in a land of lava. But white can still be whiter, for now the dun air starts to jig with specks that circle like microbes under a lens. This is the first snow. And soon the specks are feathers, blandly sidling, inconsequent as the fancies of young girls. And the air has filled, like a dance hall, a waltz of white dresses and strings of pearls. And the papers declare the snow has come to stay. A new upholstery on roof and garden, refining, lining, underlining the day. And the somber laurels break parole and blossom in enormous clumps of peonies. And the cars turn animal, moving slowly in their white fur like burrs. And the white trees fade into the hill behind them. Our London world, grown all of a piece and peaceful like the Arctic. The sums all cancelled out and the flags furled. At night we sleep behind stockades of frost. Nothing alive in the streets to run the gauntlet of this unworldly cold except the lost wisps of steam from the gratings of the sewers. It is holiday time. Time for the morning snack. Time to be leaving the country. I have taken my ticket south. I will not look back. The pipes may burst for all I care. The gutter dribble with dirty snow. The Christmas party be ruined by catarrh. Let us flee this country and leave its complications exactly where they, the devil take them, are. So Dover to Dunkirk. The land of cocaine begins across the channel. The hooter cries, to hell with the year's work. The snowflakes flirt with the steam of the steamer. But the train in France is cold. The window frosted with patterns of stars and fern. And when we scrape a peephole on the window, there is nothing new to learn. Nothing but snow and snow all the way to Paris. No roast pigs walk this way, and any snatched half hour of self-indulgence is an intercalary day. Sweet, my love, my dear, whoever you are or where, I need your company on this excursion, for where there is luxury of leisure, there should also be the luxury of women. I do not need you on my daily job, nor yet on any spiritual adventure, not when I earn my keep, but when I rob time of his growth of tinsel. No longer thinking of you or any other essential to my life, soulmate or jewel star. All I want is an elegant and witty playmate at the perfume counter or the cocktail bar. And I feel a certain pleasurable nostalgia in sitting alone, drinking, wondering if you will suddenly thread your way among these vulcanite tables to a mutually unsuspected rendezvous among these banal women with feathers in their hats and halos of evanescent fields. And these bald 30 Englishmen whose polished foreheads are the tombs of record sales. Were alcohol, anchovies, and shimmying street lamps knock the stolid almanac cock-a-hoop, where reason drowns and the senses foam, flame, tingle and loop the loop, and striking red or green matches to light these loose cigarettes of black tobacco, I need you badly. The age-old woman apt for all misuse, whose soul is out of the picture. How I enjoy this bout of cynical self-indulgence, of glittering and hard-boiled make-believe. The cynic is a creature of overstatements, but an overstatement is something to achieve. And how, with a grain of salt, I enjoy hating the world to which forever I belong. This hatred, this escape, being equally factitious, a passing song. For I cannot stay in Paris, and if I did, no doubt I should soon be bored, for what I see is not the intimate city, but the brittle dance of lights in the Place de la Concorde. So much for Christmas. I must go further south to see the new year in on hungry faces, but where the hungry mouth refuses to deny the heart's allegiance. Look! The road winds up among the prickly vineyards and naked winter trees. Over there are pain and pride beyond the snow-lit sharp annunciation of the Pyrenees.
Have you yourself been in raids in Barcelona, Mr. Langland Davis?
Yes, I should think in about a dozen so far. I think that air raids are to be thought of chiefly as an attack on the nerve centres of the man in the street. They are a psychological weapon. The chief defense against panic and fear seem to be to have something to do, to have a job.
The road ran downhill into Spain. The wind blew fresh on bamboo grasses. The white plane trees were bone naked and the issues plain. We have come to a place and space where shortly all of us may be forced to camp in time. The slender searchlights climb. Our sins will find us out, even our sins of omission. When I reached the town, it was dark. No lights in the streets, but 2.5 millions of people in circulation, condemned like the beasts in the ark, with nothing but water around them. Will there ever be a green tree or a rock that is dry? The shops are empty, and in Barceloneta, the eye sockets of the houses are empty. But still they manage to laugh. Though they have no eggs, no milk, no fish, no fruit, no tobacco, no butter, though they live upon lentils and sleep in the metro, though the old order is gone and the golden calf of Catalan industry shattered, the human values remain. Purged in the fire, and it appears that every man's desire is life rather than victuals. Life being more, it seems, than merely the bare permission to keep alive and receive orders. Humanity being more than a mechanism to be oiled and greased and forever unaware of the work it is turning out, of why the wheels keep turning. Here, at least, the soul has found its voice, though not indeed by choice. The cost was heavy. They breathe the air of war, and yet the tension admits, beside the slogans it evokes, an interest in philately, or pelota, or private jokes. And the sirens cry in the dark morning, and the lights go out, and the town is still, and the sky is pregnant with ill will, and the bombs come foxing the fated victim, as pretty as a Guy Fawkes show. Silver sprays and tracer bullets, and in the pauses of destruction, the cocks in the centre of the town crow. The cocks crow in Barcelona, where clocks are few to strike the hour. Is it the heart's reveille, or the sour reproach of Simon Peter? The year has come to an end. Time for resolutions, for stock-taking. Felice nuevo año. May God, if there is one, send as much courage again and greater vision, and resolve the antimonies in which we live, where man may be either safe because he is negative, or free on the edge of a razor. I have loved defeat and sloth, the tawdry halo of the idle martyr. I have thrown away the roots of will and conscience. Now I must look for both. Not any longer act among the cushions, the dying gall. Soon or late, the delights of self-pity must pall, and the fun of cursing the wicked world into which we were born, and the cynical admission of frustration. Our loves are not full measure, there are blight and rooks on the corn. Rather, for any measure so far given, let us be glad, nor wait on purpose to be wisely sad. When doing nothing, we find we have gained nothing. For here and now, the new Valkyries ride the Spanish constellations as over the Plaza Catalunya, Orion lolls on his side, droning over from Mallorca to maim or blind or kill the bearers of the living will, the stubborn heirs of freedom whose matter-of-fact faith and courage shame our niggling equivocations. We, who play for safety, a safety only in name. Whereas these people contain truth, whatever their nominal facade. Listen, a whir, a challenge, an obad. It is the cock crowing in Barcelona.
...1938 has been a year of thunderous eruption. Again a year in which one continuous news story overshadows all others. War.
Sleep, my body. Sleep, my ghost. Sleep, my parents and grandparents, and all those I have loved most. One man's coffin is another's cradle. Sleep, my past and all my sins. In distant snow or dried roses, under the moon for night's cocoon will open when day begins. Sleep, my fathers, in your graves, on upland, bogland, under heather. What the wind scatters, the wind saves, a sapling springs in a new country. Time is a country. The present moment, a spotlight roving round the scene. We need not chase the spotlight. The future is the bride of what has been. Sleep, my fancies and my wishes. Sleep a little and wake strong, the same but different, and take my blessing, a cradle song. And sleep, my various and conflicting selves I have so long endured. Sleep in Asclepius's temple and wake cured. And you, with whom I shared an ill 5 years long. Sleep beyond the Atlantic and wake to a glitter of dew and to bird song. And you, whose eyes are blue, whose ways are foam, sleep quiet and smiling, and do not hanker for a perfection which can never come. And you, whose minutes patter to crowd the social hours, curl up easy in a placid corner and let your thoughts close in like flowers. And you, who work for Christ, and you, as eager for a better life, humanist, atheist, and you, devoted to a cause, and you, to a family, sleep, and may your beliefs and zeal persist. Sleep quietly, Marx and Freud, the figureheads of our transition. Cagney, Lombard, Bing, and Garbo, sleep in your world of celluloid. Sleep now also, monk and satyr. Cease your wrangling for a night. Sleep, my brain, and sleep, my senses. Sleep, my hunger and my spite. Sleep, recruits to the evil army, who, for so long misunderstood, took to the gun to kill your sorrow. Sleep and be damned, and wake up good. While we sleep, what shall we dream? Of Tiernanoog or South Sea Islands, of a land where all the milk is cream and all the girls are willing? Or shall our dream be earnest of the real future when we wake? Design a home, a factory, a fortress which, though with effort, we can really make. What is it we want, really? For what end and how? If it is something feasible, obtainable, let us dream it now and pray for a possible land, not of sleepwalkers, not of angry puppets, but where both heart and brain can understand the movements of our fellows, where life is a choice of instruments and none is debarred his natural music, where the waters of life are free of the ice blockade of hunger and thought is free as the sun, where the altars of sheer power and mere profit have fallen to disuse, where nobody sees the use of buying money and blood at the cost of blood and money, where the individual, no longer squandered in self-assertion, works with the rest, endowed with the split vision of a juggler and the quick lock of a taxi, where the people are more than a crowd. So sleep in hope of this, but only for a little. Your hope must wake while the choice is yours to make, the mortgage not foreclosed, the offer open. Sleep serene, avoid the backward glance, go forward, dreams, and do not halt. Behind you, in the desert, stands a token of doubt, a pillar of salt. Sleep the past, and wake the future, and walk out promptly through the open door. But you, my coward doubts, may go on sleeping. You need not wake again, not any more. The new year comes with bombs. It is too late to dose the dead with honourable intentions. If you have honour to spare, employ it on the living. The dead are dead as 1938. Sleep to the noise of running water. Tomorrow to be crossed, however deep. This is no river of the dead or leafy. Tonight we sleep on the banks of Rubicon. The die is cast. There will be time to audit the accounts later. There will be sunlight later. And the equation will come out at last.
Colin Morgan was reading Autumn Journal by Louis MacNeice. The producer was Emma Harding.
For 70 days, we've been celebrating 70 years of the Third Programme and Radio 3.
We've looked back to the best moments from our archive
and looked forward with commissions of poetry, plays and, of course, lots of music.
And there's plenty still available to discover on the Radio 3 website.
Our celebrations will culminate in Radio 3 being broadcast into space, quite literally.
In a special edition of In Tune, live from the Goonhilly Earth Station in Cornwall.
Join me, Sean Rafferty, and my stellar guests as we launch Radio 3 into the future this Wednesday at 4:30.
BBC Radio 3, it's 11 o'clock and it's time for tonight's Early Music Late, presented by Aileen Manahan-Thomas.
Hello and welcome to Early Music Late, and to a programme that's all about the harpsichord.
This week, our trip to the best Baroque concerts from around Europe takes us to Vantaa near Helsinki. But the title of tonight's recital, given in August this year, is Mahan Esfahani in Prague. On his harpsichord, Mahan will lead us through the music of the Bach family and on to Dušek. And he opens with the master of the keyboard, Johann Sebastian Bach. The prelude and fugue in D comes from Book 2 of the Well-Tempered Clavier, written, in Bach's words, for the profit and use of musical youth desirous of learning, and especially for the pastime of those already skilled in this study.